Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror One and Crime with KK and Low. Low?
Hey girl, hey.
How's it going on your end of things?
Let me tell you how it's going on my end of things. I got
Oh.
two grievances. Okay.
Oh gosh.
Don't worry. One, so do you ever look at your husband or boyfriend in your case? Pretty much husband, because y'all live together so close enough, and be like, why? What? Seriously?
Every day of my life.
Because I had a busy day yesterday, did a lot of driving, came home, I was exhausted, fall asleep. I mean, I'm like out cold, right? Like, and my husband wakes me up to ask me what color patio furniture would I want? Blue or beige? So then I
Serious, important, extreme question that needed to be answered right
think I mumble out the words
then.
blue and literally roll back to sleep. And I'm just like looking at him, like, and I remember him saying, like, oh my God, I'm sorry. So then I'm sitting on the back patio today waiting for our HOA meeting. And I said, did you order the furniture? And he said, no. I said, so you woke me up in the middle of the night to ask me the color that I wanted, and then you didn't even freaking order it.
He just was curious
He's like,
while you were
I
sleeping.
didn't realize you were like dead asleep. Like,
He thought you were just a little asleep, not that asleep.
I purposely leaned over to him and gave him a kiss goodnight and said, goodnight, I love you. And then rolled back to my side, pulled the blanket up, and closed my eyes. Where do you think I was going?
Right, where did he miss the part about you going to sleep?
Was thinking about that today when I get home. I'm like, this has to be a conversation because, like, really? Like,
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Important stuff, patio
why?
furniture.
It's not even the fact that he woke me up to ask me, which fine, whatever, that was kind of like WTF. But then you didn't even order it,
Right.
which we could have had this conversation like today when I get off here from recording, or when I was sitting outside with him in the backyard just having small talk.
Right. Could have been saved for then. Oh, it's so
So
funny.
that was part of my night last night. And then we have these HOA meetings where everybody has to get together and they have to talk about the streets and like whatever our money goes for and vote and blah, blah, blah. And it was our turn to have it today. And then after sitting there, they're like, okay, who wants to host the next one? And it's like cricket, cricket, cricket. And of course, my husband, being who he is like, do you want to do it again? I'm like, sure.
You're like, well, since you're asking in front of everybody, of course, I would love to.
I'm like, oh my God. I mean, it's just fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
The
I
classic, it's
mean,
fine.
yeah, I'm like, you know what? The pro is I don't have to walk down the street. I don't have to go to somebody else's house and feel uncomfortable. I can just feel uncomfortable in my own house that everybody's
Yeah. But that doesn't mean you guys have to like lead the conversation, right?
Nope, it just means we're just the setting where the
You're the
meeting is
setting, you're
taking
the place where, okay, gotcha. Well, that's good, at least. At least you don't have to like conduct the meeting and be
Oh,
like,
I said maybe a couple of words. I did. My neighbor sat directly next to me, so me and her did small talk because I know her more because she lives right next door to me.
yeah.
And then there was a younger family that moved in, that was sitting across from me. So I was chatting with her, like, you know, you guys settled, you know, small talk, you know, with her. But other than that, I just, you know, gracious smiled, you know, have a cookie.
Right.
Had some cheese and crackers.
Did you have to provide the snacks?
We do.
Ah, okay. So you have to provide the setting and the snacks. Damn, that's big responsibility there for
I
your
know.
HOA meeting.
We got one of those ham and pep, or not, I'm sorry, salami, pepperoni, cheese cracker trays.
Oh, nice.
I figured old men love that shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
And
honestly, though, who doesn't love that
then we
shit?
got the Meyer variety, like 6 billion cookie flavor thing.
Oh, yeah.
So
Nice.
it was a hit. The girls, the little girls that were there, they were the icebreaker. Like, can we have a snack? And then as soon as I cracked it open, everybody else jumped in. So
Nice. You gotta love kids for that. They're always the
yeah.
icebreakers at things.
So those are my grievances. Like, when I
Yep.
say I love my husband, I really love my husband.
It shows, it's true though. You do love him because you love him through things like all of that. That's so funny. Hey. What color patio furniture do you want? You're like, what? It morning time?
Seriously,
You're like, are they gonna deliver it tonight?
what the fuck are you doing? Like, and he's done that before. Like, where I'll be like just falling asleep, or like, I don't know if he just doesn't look down or if he is just really that into, because he's on his phone, that he's
Yeah.
really not paying attention. But there's been a few times he'll be like, "Hey, Lori," and it like startles me out of a sleep, and then it's like.
Like, I don't know if you noticed, but like my eyes were closed and I was breathing heavily. That means I was sleeping.
I'm gonna
Oh,
go
that's
to sleep with
great.
a sign on my forehead tonight
Right?
that
Do not
says,
disturb.
"I am sleeping. Shut the
You'll
fuck
have a sign on your forehead every time you're in bed. It'll either say, "You can speak to me," or it'll say, "Shut
up."
the fuck
Right?
up." Just turn it whenever you're ready.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's funny.
Before Crystal dives into her show, I do have a new What's Low reading.
Oh,
So
exciting.
I finished last week or a few days ago, last episode, I was reading Verity by Colleen Hoover, and I finished it. And that book is so twisted and messed up. And like, I text my cousin, like, "Holy shit, this book has given me a stroke. My heart rate's gone up." And more than one reasons of why, and this is just, oh my God, everybody in this book is terrible.
Damn. Well, I hope they make it into a movie. I think you
They
said they,
are.
yeah, I
And
was gonna say, I thought you said they were.
Anne Hathaway is gonna do it, so we'll watch it together.
Perfect.
And
Love her.
then my new pick is, I've heard multiple people talk about this TV series, and I haven't watched it yet because I have the book. Actually, I have two copies of the book, so I'm gonna give one to Lisa, because she loves it, and it is Nine Perfect Strangers.
Oh, did you tell me about that offline last week?
I think so. Nicole Kidman stars in it.
Yes.
You remember Doer, Doer, Dorothea, Doer?
Yes.
Okay, so
With the
we're clean.
dog,
Yeah,
Snoops.
Snoopy.
Yeah.
Yes. So we're cleaning her again. I love her. She's great. Actually, she gave me another book last time I was there. She gives me all her old books. So we always talk books when I'm there. And she told me that this book's a little kind of gets a little crazy, and like, so I'm kind of interested. And
Like crazy, like how so crazy, like
I don't know, like, I'm thinking it's like kind of almost like Big Little Lies. Did you watch that?
yeah.
Because the book is like every chapter is a different title of a person, so I feel like it's kind of like
Oh,
a,
okay, and
how
then
are
they'll
we?
like intertwine towards the
Oh, I
end.
think they all get trapped, or it all takes place at one resort or something, from what
Oh,
I
so it's kind of
hear.
like White Lotus vibes too.
Probably. I'll let you know. Every time I tried to start reading it, so the first night I finished my book the day we got, or the day after we got back from vacation. So then I was like, sweet. So the next day I went to crack open the book, but I was still a little nauseous, probably from the car ride, the amusement park, like everything, my equilibrium. Even though I was popping those adrenaline like it was coming out of a Pez dispenser, I still like was feeling kind of icky. So I tried to read it and I was just like, oh my God. So I fell asleep like on page two, like not even kidding. I was like, I'm kind of dizzy. I can't read. So I laid down, took a nap. Then I went to sit down and yesterday, and as soon as I sat down, like nothing else was happening, I sit down, I literally crack open the book, and my husband's like, hey, can you do X, Y, and Z? I'm like,
You're like, oh, okay. Close the book.
So then I closed the book. So then this morning, I was going to read a little bit of it because I fell asleep last night because it was a late night and I didn't get a chance to read it. So then I sat down this morning and I was like, okay, I'm going to read a little bit of this with my coffee. And or it was yesterday morning, whatever it was. And my daughter comes down. She's like, can we go early? Can we leave now, please? I'm like, I've been on page four for the last 2 days.
You haven't made much of a dent then.
No, I took it outside. I was like, okay, I'm going to read while we're waiting for the people to come over today. I sit down, get the book. Then I, also had to like have the WTF moment with my husband about last night's situation of the color of the chairs. And
Right.
then as soon as I cracked it open to start a page, one of my neighbors trickled in. I'm like, so I am hoping to make it to page six before I go to bed tonight.
Damn, the universe is against you reading that book.
I know. Like,
Or maybe
so.
that's waiting for the perfect moment for you to really like settle in to read like a big chunk of it at once.
We'll see. So hopefully by next week I can let you know if we're at least halfway through, if not done.
Yeah.
But
Well, how's the first four pages so far?
it's great. It really set the first scene up with the first 10 sentences of the conversation with the three people very well.
Right. Does the first four pages have you hooked?
Oh yeah, it's great.
Well, then you'll know once you get to page 12, you'll be even more deep inside of it hooked.
I know, right?
That's funny. Yeah, next week I'll have to remind myself to ask you what page you're on.
Right.
How many pages are there total?
Geez, well, Pete, 76, that's chapter.
Chapter 76. Oi.
77, 78, 79. That's acknowledgments. So we're looking at 447.
Got a bit of ways to go, damn. That's a big
And
ass book.
the funny thing is, that's kind of like big for probably for like us. For the average person, they're like, that's 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that would take me several months probably to complete.
But I got the weekend to myself, so I should be able to get some reading in because everybody's going to be gone.
Oh,
So,
nice. You'll be able to crack it open and really get way more than you've gotten done in it.
I mean, I still have the dog, so who knows, but
Right. Well, I'm knocking on wood for you, having high hopes that
thanks,
you can
thanks.
at least make it to page 20. And now me, who doesn't read books, I just watch things. I watched, there's like a new Netflix documentary. I don't know how new it is, but it's newer. It's called A Deadly American Marriage. And I thought it was like pretty interesting when I watched it, and I was struggling with like coming up with a story to do. So I was like, I'll just pop off with an episode on it because it was interesting, and here we go.
Hey, go, man. Pop it off.
Yeah. So,
Pop it like it's hot.
probably like it's hot. And since it's like newer, I mean, the story's not new, but like the documentary's newer. So if you haven't seen it, spoiler alerts in here, the whole thing. But yeah, basically it's surrounding this guy named Jason Corbett, and the story became really big and like popular in Ireland because that's where part of it takes place. And it was like kind of big news here, but nothing like crazy news. I at least not that I recall. But apparently it was like a very, very large headline in Ireland. So we'll kind of dive into that today, and then maybe it'll inspire you guys to go watch the doco.
I'm always up for a good doco, so let's see how you narrate it, and then I'll decide if I want to watch it.
Okay. If I suck at it, well, either way, you might want to watch it, because if it's really enticing and interesting, you might be like, oh, I want to watch this. But if I suck at it, you might be like, let's see how much she like failed at telling this story. But yeah, so we can kind of first, I'll give some background on like Jason Corbett, who he was, everything like that. So Jason Corbett originally lived in Limerick, Ireland. He met his first wife, Margaret, but everybody called her Mags Fitzpatrick. They fell in love, typical story, whatever, got married, and then they had two children named Jack and Sarah. Jack was a few years older than Sarah. Actually, I think like maybe like 2.5 years. And in November of 2006, a few months after their daughter Sarah was born, Mags died unexpectedly after suffering from an asthma attack. So that was very sad. I just think that like when, a parent dies like so soon after they have a child, I can't even imagine how it is for the spouse, because you have this like baby to take care of, but you're also like grieving your spouse.
Yeah, and I always sit there and think of like the sadness for me. I mean, the spouse, yes, but the sadness for me is the baby never knowing its mother. And
Oh, yeah.
especially, I mean, it's sad for a boy, but even for a girl, like, because it's like, your mom can't help you on your wedding day and do your hair on prom and teach you about boys and help you with me. Like, all those milestones, like, you either get a really good stepmom or grandma or an aunt, but it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, and it's just like not always the same, I mean, depending on the situation, but yeah, when you, I feel like, don't have that mother figure fully to like look up to, it just changes the course of things, so that's sad. And Meg's sister, her name was Catherine, she was there at their house on the night that Mags like was having this like asthma attack and getting sick, and she helped Jason carry Mags to his car before they got to the hospital to like get her immediate like medical attention. And she even says, at the hospital she heard him sobbing, like asking her not to leave him because she was like not doing well. And so yeah, she ultimately obviously passed away. And after she died, as you can imagine, wasn't the happiest of times for Jason, and he was just trying to navigate being this like, widow. And like, are men called widows?
I believe so.
Okay, I didn't.
There's a widower,
Widower, maybe. Yeah.
widower.
Yeah, I think there's like a slight difference. But yeah, he was like navigating that, and then also navigating being a single dad to these two really young kids. He luckily had a lot of family around him in Ireland to help him. But, still just really, really tough situation. So, flash forward a bit, a couple years later, it's April 2008. And Jason's, he's working, he's a single dad, he has these two little kids that he's trying to take care of. So he's like, puts out this ad to hire, and it's an au pair for the family, which is basically like a nanny who like helps out with like chores around the house and stuff. So he puts this ad out, and he hires a 24-year-old Knoxville, Tennessee native named Molly Martins. And a little bit about what was going on with Molly at this time. She had just ended a long-term relationship that she was in. She was in her 20s, and she just suffered a miscarriage. So when she saw the opportunity, in the ad to be a nanny, like living in Ireland, she kind of thought, why not? This is the perfect time. I'll be around kids. I'll be able to travel. It's a job, you know. She kind of just was like, why not do this? So while Molly was there, you know, she's taking care of the kids and the house and even a little bit Jason and stuff. Her and Jason began to grow very close, and Molly was getting super close to the kids as well, you know, kind of filling that whole wife and mom role for the family after Mags, you know, died and has been gone for a couple of years now. And this eventually, their closeness led to Jason and Molly becoming romantically involved and just fully being in a relationship. Now, after a while, they all decided to move from Ireland to where Molly's family was in the United States, North Carolina. So the family moved to Lexington in North Carolina, and now it's April 2011. And Jason and Molly get married and they move into this house at Panthers Creek Court in Wahlberg, North Carolina, after they, you know, said I do and everything. And Jason was definitely the breadwinner of the family. He paid $390,000 for the house. He gave Molly $80,000 to, you know, decorate it and furnish it and everything. And he also bought her a BMW SUV, so he had the cash. He also even previously gave his father-in-law $49,000 just as like a contribution towards their wedding ceremony.
Dang.
Yeah, so Jason had the dollars. And you know, Molly had been in these kids' lives for quite a bit now, quite a few years, and they called her mom. You know, she was Jason's wife. She had known the kids since they were really little, like raising them, taking care of them, everything like that. So they viewed her as a mom, and she always wanted to formally adopt them, like as her own children. You know, she wanted them to acquire American citizenship. But Jason instead applied for green cards and kept his family's like Irish passports. He also had apparently planned to one day return to Ireland. He wanted to like open a pizza restaurant in this one specific area. That was kind of his end goal, but for now he was still staying, you know, in North Carolina. But the big topic of Molly wanting to adopt the children as her own became really a big point of contention for them in the relationship because, you know, she felt like she's their mom. She's been there since they've been little. She wants to officially, legally be their mom. And Jason, you know, he reached out to lawyers to ask about moving forward with the adoption, but it just never really seemed to work out, which definitely really frustrated Molly. We also see emails from Jason, you know, asking the lawyer. He's like basically asking, you know, if he and Molly were to get divorced, how would custody work, you know, if she were to adopt them? And the lawyer replied by saying, you know, usually the mother gets full custody. So, in my opinion, putting those things together, it's never like confirmed, but in my opinion, I would say that probably scared him. And that's why he never filed to have Molly adopt the children and legally become their mother because he eventually wanted to go back to Ireland. And also, like, if they got divorced, then like he doesn't want them to have her to have full custody of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that 100%. And I feel like in that situation, if they did divorce, you would think that because he is biologically dad, he should have full custodial rights. Now, if she legally adopted them, then she could have some co-parenting rights, I guess, depending on how long, you know, they're
Right.
together. But I feel like end game, if he decides he's moving to Ireland or whatever. I don't know. But you'd think the biological parent would have more of the rights.
Yeah, you would think, and like since he was the one that was making all the money too, like you'd think he would have more of the rights. But I think he was nervous because like she was the one that like took them to all of their appointments and took them to sports and like, you know, she was like in charge basically of the kids' day to day
She was
and like
mom,
activities.
At the end of the day, she was mom, you know.
Right. So I think he thinks that, or he was thinking, and again, it wasn't said, but in my opinion, I feel like that's why he never filed, because he just thought, well, she could present all of this in court and be like, I'm their whole world. I take care of them. So like that might give her full custody. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but so far, I mean, obviously someone's going to mess up somewhere else. This wouldn't be a story. but I feel like at least she's stepping up to the plate. She's not saying my stepchild. She's saying my child, my children, I want this. She's doing all the things that a mother should do. So far, so good.
Right. I love the hesitation in the voice. So far, yes.
Because I don't know which one's shady. This could go either way.
Right, right. So Jason's older brother, his name was John. He was still, you know, living in Ireland and everything. But he, you know, later after everything that we're going to talk about, he said, you know, the issue around Molly adopting the kids had caused a lot of friction in their relationship. And John also said that Jason had, you know, specifically processed the children's legal resident status via his job rather than through Molly's family, just because he had concerns that they wouldn't be like brought back to Ireland in case like he died unexpectedly or something. So that was kind of another reason that he didn't, because he wanted, I don't know, which is interesting because it's like that's essentially, she's essentially their mom. So I don't know, he would have rather them gone back to Ireland with his family than stayed with her, which definitely, you know, raises some red flags and makes you think like, why, you know?
It could be just an overprotective dad. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it sucks if they've been together for that long and it's the only mom she knows. It is kind of hard to be like, well, this is my family. Because if her family, her parents were treating them as grandparents to grandchildren, like normal, it's kind of like hard to hear like my family. It's like, well, yes, but we don't look at them as blood difference because I didn't, you know, birth them. They're my children too, you know, like, I don't
right.
know. It all, it gets sticky. It gets sticky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sticky, sticky, sticky.
Oh, and it gets even stickier. So, you know, in the beginning of Jason and Molly getting together, his family was like very approving of Molly becoming like romantically involved with him in the beginning, because, you know, he was in a sad place after his wife died, obviously. So it was like bringing him kind of back to life and giving him a smile, and like she was like kind of filling that role or whatever, so they like loved it at first. But after some things, they became a little bit concerned about Molly's behavior. Specifically, they, you know, said it was very deceitful and erratic behavior during their relationship. So Jason's sister, her name's Tracy, she later said that Molly had a very long history of lying. She described her as a fantasist who claimed to have been an Olympic swimmer and a qualified Montessori teacher. She also said that she previously fostered a young boy, which all three of those things turned out to not be true. So she definitely had a pattern of making things up that were just not true at all. You know, his sister also said that Molly had told her that she was bipolar, and allegedly she experienced several miscarriages before she met Jason. You know, and she said that she was like self-harming and drinking margaritas throughout the day before driving the children to appointments. She also alleged that right before their wedding, she discovered something that kind of like shook her, because she, so his family flew there for their wedding from Ireland, and she was talking to one of her friends who was like the maid of honor at the wedding. And apparently Molly told her friend that she was pen pals with Jason's first wife, Mags, before she died from the asthma attack. Or no, she told her cancer, actually, sorry. And the truth is, like, she didn't know Mags at all. They never had a friendship. They never knew each other. But for some reason, Molly was telling people that she was friends with his deceased wife before she, like, met Jason, which is just such a bizarre thing. And his sister, you know, says that it was such a weird thing to find out, like, right on their wedding day, to be like, why would she lie about that?
Oh, the red flags are popping up like dandelions in the grass.
They are popping. They're flying. And his sister also later discovered that Molly had been released from a psychiatric clinic in Georgia just before she traveled to meet Jason back in 2008. And she did not disclose her mental health history until just a few weeks before they got married. She also allegedly lied to her new neighbors in their like house in North Carolina. They like were getting together, and she told people in the neighborhood that Sarah, Jason's daughter, was her biological daughter. Even like went as far to give like a lengthy description of how difficult her labor was. You know, they were having this like Bible study group, and she was telling everybody about like how hard the labor was and how Sarah's her daughter. So people were very confused when they like found out like Sarah was not her biological daughter and she didn't actually give birth to her.
Oh my gosh. And the neighborhood chatter, you can't come back from that.
Mm-hmm. And you can't.
Y'all watch Desperate Housewives, like shit travels and y'all can't get that back.
No, once the gossip hits the hoods, it's gone from there.
Oh my gosh.
And his sister also claimed that Molly had secretly told the two children that Jason had killed their mother, which later the accusation was corroborated by Sarah. We'll kind of get to that. But so she kind of twisted a lot of things about the truth.
Oh my gosh.
Other examples that were cited in like an affidavit submitted by his sister regarding Molly's erratic behavior was her holding the face of then 7-year-old Jack under a running kitchen faucet as punishment for splashing her with water. And another incident where Jack was punished for not calling her mom. And Jason's family friend, her name was Lynn, she alleged that Molly had become angry for several days when Jack reminded her that she was not his mother. So she really, it's kind of painting a picture now, right? Like she really placed her like focus on wanting to be mom. And so if anybody like said anything or reminded her that she like wasn't biological mom, it was like bad news.
The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world.
Facts, spitting the truth. If you know, you know.
Right.
She also, like I said, you know, she told her neighbors that like Sarah was her own daughter. So she had been like avoiding telling her neighbors that Jack and Sarah were not her children. And apparently she became just fully enraged when Jack told people the truth, like, oh no, she's not like she's not my real mom. Like she's like my mom, but not my biological mom. And he was a kid, like a young kid. And that like set her off. At one point, Molly allegedly became super irritated and screamed at several guests during their wedding banquet after one of her bridesmaids bought food from McDonald's, for like a young boy who apparently was allergic to egg whites. So like he couldn't eat the main meal that was at their wedding, so she like brought him McDonald's, and that just set her off apparently.
My gosh.
So really just painting a picture of how she was.
Yeah, so she was like nice on paper, but behind the closed doors. Before you continue, I just want to say your dog's foot blended in with your bed and blanket, and I did not even realize that Hank was laying there until I just saw his leg move backwards a little bit.
That's so
I'm
funny.
like
I forgot he was in here, and I don't know if you saw me, but he like made a noise, and so
I
like
can
I
see his
turned.
foot stretching, and I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, oh my God, that's her dog.
I forgot he was in here. He's been so quiet.
Last time it was your foot, this time it's your dog's
Yep,
foot.
it's
You guys get me with the feet.
always a foot. That's so funny. Yeah, he scared me too. So we were both probably startled in the same moment. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he was even in here. But yeah, another family friend of theirs said that at one point Jason left a social function early because he was clearly upset after Molly, his wife, started fat shaming him in front of several of their friends there. Adding that, he was like most people, he was a little self-conscious about his weight. And so the fact that Molly was like doing this in front of people, let alone, is just terrible. And even his sister later said that this incident kind of was like one of the last straws that made up Jason's mind that he wanted to go back to Ireland without Molly. Like he was just kind of over everything. And so here we get into the chaos of things. So on August 2nd, 2015, Thomas Martins, who is Molly's father, he called 911 at 3 a.m. to inform them that his son-in-law Jason was badly injured. Thomas told the dispatcher that he intervened in a fight that was happening between Jason and Molly, and he says that he isn't sure, but he may have killed him. So police responders arrive to the house and they find Jason unresponsive with like very serious head injuries that very obviously proved fatal for him. So he did die. So obviously they brought Thomas and Molly into the station to give statements to the officers, and they linked Jason's death to a quote domestic disturbance. Now, kind of what they said was that she said that Jason had been drunk and he woke up in the middle of the night and just started like strangling her. And so she was like making a lot of noise, trying to get him to stop. And her mom and dad were in the basement of their house. And the dad, I guess, said that he heard a bunch of noise. So he ran upstairs. And he says that he saw Jason strangling Molly. So there was a baseball bat that he took and he just started hitting him. And then Molly took a brick that was in their room because she says that Jason like pushed her dad and was like going after him. So then she picked up the brick and like hit him in the head as well. So that was their story, that it was like he just attacked her out of nowhere. And it was self-defense, essentially.
Which does not sound like it gets his personality at all.
Right. And that's what they kind of show in it as well. Like everybody that knew him and people that knew him very, very well said that that would never happen. So a few hours after they were released from police custody, Molly Martin's allegedly spent $5,500 on having her house industrially cleaned of all traces of blood. Which is
Crazy.
weird because it's like they're doing an ongoing investigation and you're going to spend over 5 grand immediately to have it all extensively cleaned. I get it. You have the kids, and if you see the pictures, it was a very messy scene. But just kind of a little bit weird there.
Which, even if her story was a tad bit true, just a tad bit. Oh, he woke up strangling me, so I hit him with a brick to get him to stop or whatever. One hit to get him off to knock him out wouldn't leave that much of a bloody, messy chaos versus, no, I just straight up murdered my husband.
Right. And well, because her dad was hitting him with a baseball bat too, but they
Yeah,
even,
there's that
yeah, they even asked them do you know how many times you hit him? And they're like, no, I don't remember. But the officer that was, investigating that thing, he said that in all the years he's been doing it, he's never seen a head injury that bad. Like there was a chunk of his skull out because it was so bad. And it's to a certain point, you probably knocked him out if you were just doing self-defense, but yet you hit him so many times and so hard that chunks of his head were coming out,
Well, not
essentially.
only that, if you don't know how many times you hit him, you probably did overkill.
Yeah, probably, which they definitely did.
One hit to the back, to the knees, to whatever to get him to stop would have taken him out. And I feel like this was just like almost, I don't know. I feel like it might have even been purposely planned for the kids and for the money.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a weird situation. And authorities were definitely frustrated at Molly for the cleaning situation, and also she was attempting to have Jason cremated before his family even arrived from Ireland. She also was not answering his family at all when they were trying to get in contact with her. They just found out that their brother just was killed, and she's not even in communication with them, and she's trying to have his body cremated before they even get there.
Oh, she's already got those kids' suitcases packed and ready to go.
And she only permitted them access to see, to have his remains after they first signed a legal agreement to pay the full costs of his funeral, and the moved of his body to Ireland. So she was like, all right, that's fine. You can have access to his body as long as you're paying for his funeral. It's so shitty.
I hate Molly.
And luckily in 2007, Jason made a will and he named his sister Tracy and her husband as legal guardians of his children if he should die. So thankfully he had that in place. And he did not alter the will after he married Molly at all. So I feel like he knew, what would be best for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And after a few days after his death, Molly, she was trying to do everything she could to keep a hold of the kids. And she formally filed for custody of 10-year-old Jack and 8-year-old Sarah, who, she did raise as their mother figure for the previous 8 years. So they did know her as mom, but she obviously was not the best fit for them to continue to be raised by alone.
They're probably terrified of her.
Yeah, from what I've heard. And when Jason's family arrived in the United States, they filed a legal challenge. And on August 20th, 2015, the authorities dismissed Molly's claim and gave Jack and Sarah into the custody of his sister Tracy, who immediately flew the two children back to Ireland, you know, right away.
Ha, take that, Molly.
Right. And they did, you know, do the full funeral service in Ireland, and he was laid to rest right beside his first wife, Margaret, at that cemetery that she was buried at. So, like, that was nice.
These poor kids have to do this twice.
Oh, I know. And it was really sad because another thing that she did, which was shown in the documentary, was, like, these kids, when they were being questioned, you know, after their dad was murdered, they both said in their, like, investigation, like, questions or whatever, they were like, yeah, my dad was really angry. And, you know, mind you, they're, like, 8 and 10 or something at this point, so they're pretty young. They're like, my dad was very angry. Yeah, he would always be mad at mom. Like, he would always, like, yeah, he would hit her sometimes. He would be physically and mentally abusive. And so then you're sitting there thinking, like, oh, did he, like, have anger problems or something? Like, they're saying this. But later it was revealed, and they both admitted that she, like, told them to say that, you know.
I was like, because most 10-year-olds don't say he was physically and emotionally abusive. Those aren't the words kids would use.
Right. And that's what they said too, like, investigators, they were, when they were reviewing the tapes, they're like, most kids don't talk like that. So it seemed like rehearsed to them. But the kids had a really tough time, especially Jack, when they got to Ireland. I mean, not only because, you know, their dad had died, but they both expressed that they were really sad to leave Molly, just because, like, she was what they knew. Like, she was their mom, essentially. And, you know, Jack always said he wanted to go back. He missed being there. He missed his friends there, his sports there. So it was just a really big change for them. But one night he snuck, like, a phone call calling Molly, and he just left a voicemail, and he said, like, don't tell anyone I'm calling you, but I really miss you, and I want to go back, and I love you so much, which made me, like, want to cry, because I'm like, that's so sad, you know, because he's just a kid, and, like, that was essentially, like, his mom, even if she wasn't, like, a great mom, that's all he knew, and then his dad is gone now too, and he's in a new country that he hasn't been in since he was, like, way younger. So it was really sad. But then he said that voicemail got released to the public, and that's when he was kind of, like, felt, like, super betrayed by her, because obviously she's the one that released it to the public. Mm-hmm. Because for several months after the children got brought to Ireland, she started posting nonstop pictures of them on Facebook, like, trying to get in touch with her. Like, she would post her phone number and her email, because she just wanted them, or she wanted it to look like, at least, like, get in contact with me. And yeah, so it kind of was like a show almost for her. Now, Jason's family eventually sent, like, a cease and desist letter to her asking her to stop posting pictures of the kids on social media. And in response to, apparently Molly's uncle claimed in a radio interview that Jason had been seeking dual Irish American citizenship for the kids. But his family said that that was not true. They called it deluded propaganda, saying that their brother never talked about this, never had plans to do this. It was just another way they thought that, like, she was trying to get the kids back with her. So on January 5th, 2016, Molly and her dad, Thomas, were charged with second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter in relation to Jason Corbett's death. So after unsealed indictments revealed that a grand jury had determined probable cause had been established. After having their mugshots taken, both of them were ordered by the Superior Court to hand over their passports and to not attempt to contact Jason's children at all in Ireland. Now, they were released on a bail bond of $200,000 each to await trial. Which is like, where do people get money for this? That's my question. So much money. And in July of that year, Molly's legal team filed a defense motion to exclude evidence of Jack Corbett's earlier rebuttal interview where he withdrew allegations that his father had physically abused Molly, claiming the interview was just hearsay and unreliable. Because, you know, she had the whole story of he was physically abusive to me. Like, it was a ongoing thing that she said. But yeah. And during the pre-trial hearings in early June 2017, Jason's sister Tracy testified that once she brought Jack back to Ireland, he informed her that some of the information he gave in previous interviews with the U.S. social workers was untrue. So after that, the judge eventually ruled the children's statements taken shortly after their father's death as inadmissible. So they were not allowed to be submitted as evidence because Jack ultimately said, like, that wasn't true. And even Sarah, the girl, said, like, what they were saying in those interviews was not true. The following month, lawyers that were acting on behalf of Thomas and Molly, they filed a late pretrial motion attempting to prevent the prosecution from, you know, stating that Jason had a reputation for being, you know, a very nonviolent, easygoing person while they were presenting evidence to the jury. But it's like, if that was true, why could they not say that? You know, if he really was like an easygoing, chill person, and that's what everybody said of him, they should be able to say that in court. So the trial of Molly and Thomas Martins began with jury selection on July 17th, 2017 at the Davidson County Superior Court in Lexington, North Carolina. Both accused entered formal pleas of not guilty to the second degree murder of Jason Corbett, claiming that they acted in self-defense. And a few days later, during the trial, the DA, Alan Martin, described to the jury how Jason had, you know, such terrible, serious head injuries that his autopsy couldn't even determine exactly how many times he was struck because it was just, his skull was so messed up, it couldn't even tell. Also, they found in the autopsy, first, they found that he had no alcohol in his system, which they both claimed that he was drunk. So that was false. And then they did find traces of trazodone in his bloodstream, which was like Molly had a prescription for trazodone. And it's like a sedative, like a sleeping pill, essentially. And she had gotten this prescription 3 days before he died. So it was weird that, you know, it was in his system. So I'm like, okay, they probably drugged him then to make him like out of it to attack.
Which is even worse. So not only is he like really in this almost induced coma, then you're going to beat the shit out of him until he dies with a bat that he can't even have a chance to defend himself.
Right.
Or fight back.
Like, it's all just disgusting. Sick. And Martin attested that while Jason's dead body was found naked and covered in blood, both of the Martins, Molly and Thomas, did not appear to have any physical injuries whatsoever. Molly's voice was hoarse and she was rubbing her neck, which, you know, that was what the defense kind of countered, saying that his client swung a baseball bat at Jason in an effort to protect his daughter and himself after he said that, you know, he found him strangling her and he was supposedly saying, I'm going to kill her, I'm going to kill her. But yet she didn't have any injuries on her neck, and like neither of them had any injuries on them.
And he was had a sedative in him.
Right.
So he couldn't strangle her even if he wanted to.
Right. And their next door neighbor at the time, his name was David Fritch. He described to the court how he and Jason had mowed their lawns the day before that he died. And they sat down together to drink beer afterwards, like around 3:30. Their wives joined them an hour later, and they continued drinking until about 8 p.m. when Molly's parents arrived for a surprise weekend visit. Now, according to the neighbor, Jason had consumed 7 beers. He was in, he said, in good humor and did not appear to be drunk when they parted company. So again, he's saying like he drank beers, but he did not appear to be drunk. But also toxicology found, I forget what it was. They did like the testing on his body, and the blood alcohol level was like 20 milligrams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood, which is literally just a quarter of the drinking and driving limit for North Carolina. So he had like hardly any alcohol in his system at all. Like even in the documentary, the guy said like he was at like a 0.08 or something, and the driving limit is like quite a bit above that where he could still be driving. So yeah, he was definitely not drunk whatsoever.
Dang, 7 beers, I'd be like floored.
Same, I know. But I guess, you know, he was kind of a bigger guy, and if he, you know, those Irish men can drink.
Right.
But yeah, Davidson County Emergency Call Center agent, her name was Karen Capps. She had worked as an emergency call dispatcher for about 16 years. She testified that she was the one that took the 911 call on the night that Jason was killed. And after a recording of the entire call was played to the court, she remarked that Thomas Martins seemed surprisingly calm throughout the near 14-minute conversation. And that although he had allegedly performed over 400 exhausting CPR chest compressions while Molly was like shouting the count, like while he was doing the CPR, she said he was not panting or gasping or out of breath at all when he like returned to the phone. So like, it just made it seem very obvious that he was not actually performing CPR and they were just pretending like they were.
Yeah, because don't they even say, like, when you do the compressions, there's always a chance you break their ribs because you're doing it?
Yeah, you could break their, yeah, but because people get so exhausted.
Well, that's performing. What I'm saying. Like, and if that wasn't, that'd be another thing. Like, there's no pressure on his chest, so clearly you did not do that.
Right, yeah. And even everybody in there that was, like, listening to it was like, there's no way, like, that he's talking so normally and sounds so normal on the phone, and he just did a shit ton of chest compressions. Like, there's no way. But yeah, autopsy reports also indicated that he had suffered blunt force trauma blows to not only, of course, his head, but his torso and his arms as well. Like I said, his head injuries were so bad that when they showed the pictures in court of his head injuries, one member of the jury literally became physically ill looking at it and had to like immediately leave the room because it was so bad. And one of the officers that was the first to arrive at their house that night, they described to the jury how the blood was splattered on the walls. It was like all over the walls, the floor, the bed, the hallway, and the bedroom. It went into like the bathroom as well. And, you know, they took crime scene photos there. And after his body had been removed, he also helped take like the children outside to Molly's mom, but she just created a mess in that room, essentially, her and her dad, because it was like everywhere. It was even talked about how it looked like lower on the wall, like he had already been like down and like they still were hitting him because like of how the blood splatter was like on the walls and floors and stuff. And also, while they were like going over everything, one of the medical examiners noticed that Jason's skin felt really cool when they touched it. And they determined that the body temperature was like much lower than they expected it would be, and no electrical signals from the heart were detected. So it was, they described it as alarming as his lack of body temperature, basically insinuating that he probably was dead for a little bit longer than like them immediately calling the police to come there. They probably had to get their story straight, basically.
Oh, for sure.
And Molly's story was accusing Jason of strangling her, and that's what happened. So one of the crime scene examiners asked for her permission to photograph her, just to record any injuries. And after taking pictures from all angles, he could not find any evidence of injuries at all. And he had to instruct her to stop rubbing and tugging at her neck while he took the images. So the officer kind of added that while Molly was sitting in his patrol car after the incident, she was also rubbing her neck in like a scrubbing motion. So kind of seemed weird, like maybe she was trying to make marks herself by like keep rubbing it, you know what I mean?
That's what I was going to say.
And he said she was making a lot of crying noises, but he did not observe any actual tears like coming out of her eyes. Now Joanne Lawrie, who worked with Molly's dad at the United States Department of Energy for several years, testified that before Jason and Molly's wedding in 2011, Thomas expressed his dislike for Jason and all the friends that he had invited to the ceremony, describing them as rude and displaying very rowdy behavior. And in another conversation 2 months before Jason died, she claimed that Thomas said to her, "That son-in-law, I hate him." So definitely not setting them up for looking the best at all.
Sounds like a little bit of jealousy or envy.
Yeah, definitely. And Jason's sister Tracy told the court that Jason was homesick around the time of his death and had planned to move back to Ireland so that his son could start high school there, and that Jason had mentioned returning over 12 months before he was killed, giving her, kind of a cause for freaking out on him and wanting to kill him so that she could keep the kids for herself. My opinion, but.
Seems like it might be the right opinion.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. But yeah, on August 3rd, 2017, at the conclusion of the prosecution's case, defense lawyers submitted a motion for the murder charges against Molly and Thomas to be dismissed. But the judge ruled that, the evidence had been established against both of them and still directed the jury to, come up with a verdict after everything. So, Thomas Martins also took the stand in his own defense. He said that on the night in question, he sticks with the story that he was awoken by like loud noises and screaming. He came in, struck him with a baseball bat after seeing his arms around her neck, and he ended up on the floor where Molly kept hitting him over the head with like the brick. They did have like a reason for the brick being in the room. They were doing like some gardening thing and they were like planting with like putting bricks around it. And the son Thomas wanted to paint a brick to like put in their bedroom, and so that's why it was in there, I guess. But
It's so
yeah,
random.
right. Unless she like told him, maybe she like manipulated that too, being like, "Oh, paint this," so then she could like have it in the room with her. So the DA during, the time that he was addressing the jury and like closing statements and stuff, he asserted that Molly had, very big motives to have her husband killed. He highlighted how she would inherit the home, all of the stuff in the home. She would get a $600,000 life insurance policy payout. And most importantly to her, she would, assume the custody of his children. So he reminded the jury that, he had consistently refused to sign adoption papers prior to his death, and how he also planned to return home to Ireland without her, basically insinuating everything that we're thinking about, why she probably had the motive to do it. And on August 9th, 2017, after less than 4 hours of jury deliberations, 67-year-old Thomas Martins and his 33-year-old daughter, Molly Corbett Martins, were unanimously found guilty of the second-degree murder of Jason Corbett. And both of them were sentenced to a minimum of 20 years and a maximum of 25 years in prison, as per the prosecution's recommendation.
Boom.
Oh, you think? You would think, boom.
Oh man, she's taking my
Yeah.
boom away.
I
Oh.
know. I wish I couldn't. But on March 12th, 2021, the North Carolina Supreme Court ruled by a 4-3 majority that Molly Martins and her father must be granted a new trial for the death of Jason Corbett, asserting that the North Carolina Court of Appeals was correct to, take off their convictions on the grounds that certain statements made by Jason's children to investigating officers in the aftermath of his death were wrongly excluded from being used by defense lawyers during their original trial. So those videos of the kids being like, "Yeah, my dad was really angry and he like abused our mom." They didn't use that in the original trial, right? Because both of them said that they lied. But now the defense is coming back saying like those videos should have been used in the original trial. And also, Molly had like been taking recordings in the house, and someone like had suggested to her if she wanted to like get custody and he was abusive, you should have evidence. So she put a bunch of like recording devices around the house. And in my opinion, at this part, when I was watching it, I was like, wait. Is she actually like telling the truth? And was he actually angry? Because they also had like a thing where he went to the doctor's a few weeks before he was murdered, and he told his doctor that he just kept feeling like randomly angry for no reason. He was just having anger issues and he didn't know why. So when this started to happen, I was like, oh my gosh, wait a minute. Is everything changing? Like, do
Well,
I believe
videos,
her now?
people can edit that shit to make it look like something it's not.
Right. And it wasn't video, it was just audio. And they played a couple of the audio clips like in the documentary. And it was like, yes, he sounded like a little bit like a jerk, but it wasn't anything like crazy abusive. And like also she probably just picked out, everybody has their moments where they probably sound like a jerk when they're arguing or if they're frustrated,
Dude, you
especially
could.
if she was like so terrible to him and the kids, he probably felt frustrated a lot.
You could
And
go back through tons of audio of me and you doing this show, and you could make a whole different show
yeah.
doing different clips of things that you said and I said, and it could be taken a totally different way.
Exactly. But they agreed that they could get a new trial. So they kind of went over all of that I kind of talked about. Like they went through the whole thing again. But in the new trial, they included like the videos of the kid saying that he was abusive. They included that she like secretly recorded him and that he said this at the doctor's. They also went off on this tangent saying that, they believe that Jason killed his first wife, Mags. She didn't actually have an asthma attack. He strangled her, and that's why she died. Like, they just had all this stuff that they like presented to court to like deliver their like impact statements and things like that. So it was quite a crazy turn of events. And ultimately, on June 6, 2024, Molly and Thomas Martins were released from prison after completing their sentences for the voluntary manslaughter portion of Jason Corbett, but they did not have to complete their sentences for the second degree murder. So they were released and subjected to 1 year of post-release supervision. So they're like free and like out there.
Oh, it makes me so
And
angry.
I know. And the kids, like, even now, like, they're like older teenagers now, like almost, though I think the one son might be like 20 now or something. And they're like not happy at all.
So, end game, she still didn't get the kids, which is good.
Yeah.
I just hope she didn't get like the inheritance money and all that stuff, hopefully.
I hope not.
But oh my gosh. And I hope that whoever she's with now like knows the story and just like, oh dear God.
Watch your back.
Yeah.
Well, she, her and her dad were also in the documentary speaking. So you kind of hear both sides of it, which is interesting because I feel like a lot of
Yeah,
times
but she looks like
documentaries
a
don't do
little
that.
frickin' actress.
Yeah, for sure. She almost had me for a second where I was almost believing her, but then I was like, no, never mind. She's crazy.
Huh.
Especially after like all the weird lies that she told people. Like she obviously was like a pathological liar and stuff.
Well, there's the things here. This has revealed what Molly Martin's life is now. After the dead Netflix deadly marriage episode, so hopefully she's miserable.
I hope so.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I definitely would encourage everyone to go watch it because it's definitely interesting hearing like everybody's perspective on what happened and like their interviews and stuff. Because obviously I only like went over like the main facts of everything. It's not long, it's only one thing. Like it's not episodes. It's like a movie length, basically.
Gotcha. Well, Saturday I have some time on my own. I'm gonna watch that one. I'm gonna try to watch Adolescent.
Oh, nice, yes.
Probably get in some Supernatural. I mean,
Duh.
read a
Duh.
little bit of my book. So yeah, I'll have to check it out. I know Seth Rogen's got a new show out called Studio. He was talking about it. I guess there's like a lot of celebrities in it, so I might check that out.
Oh, okay. I never heard of that.
But yeah, go back and listen to the Dax Shepard Seth Rogen Returns. It's really funny.
Yeah,
Like
I'll have to.
he talks about how he because they were talking about when Wiz Khalifa came to the pod. Dax said at one point he looked over at Monica. And her eyes are just all big. He's looking at Robbie, Rob. He's not even looking at the computer anymore. He's like, everyone is just freaking stoned. And Seth was kind of like co-signing, like, yeah, he can smoke. And then Dax
From like
says,
a contact high, kind of.
yeah. And then they said he smoked like 5 joints in a row while he was at the pod.
Damn.
And he said that he asked Seth, who his biggest like smoke down was with. He said, oh my God, one time he's like, after doing, I don't know what it was, what they did together, but he smoked at Snoop. And he said, and he went back to Snoop's trailer and he's like, they were just smoking for hours and talking. And he went back and sat in his car and he's like, fuck. He's like, I got to cancel the rest of my day, man. He's like, I can't, I'm done. Like,
he was out for the count.
Yeah. But it was just really funny. And they were just talking about this new show. He's a producer on it. And how, like, in the show, I think he's like a producer of a movie. Like, he plays a producer playing a producer type thing.
Okay.
And he was just, but it sounds like there's like a lot of celebrities in it. And it sounds like it's really funny and really, they were giving it a lot of hype. So I might check that out.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds like it's good. I feel like anything he does is usually pretty good and funny.
Yeah. Yep. He was it was cracking me up on that episode. It was just he's just so like, I mean, besides being like probably a top stoner, he's just like so normal. Like, he's just a dude that can do a thing that has money. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's very humble. He's very just like, whatever, like, I don't care about money. Money is just money. Like, I'm like, I'll take it.
I know. If you don't care, I'll take some. I don't need all of it. Just like a little. It's fine.
Yeah, it was making me laugh. That was the, sorry. That was a good one to listen to.
I'll have to check that one out. I've been slacking on listening to podcasts.
So yeah, and there's a couple of people that were on there that were, I'm listening to Anthony Anderson right now, and he's just making me laugh really hard. And I told you, Ike, what is it, Barnholtz or Barn?
Yeah, something like that, Barnholtz or something. Yeah,
he was really funny. So there's been some funny ones. I'm like, okay.
Dak stepping up his game. You know, they do video podcasts now.
Yes. Oh, because another one I listened to today, which was really good, and I might watch over the weekend, called Don't Attempt This at Home, or Don't Attempt This, or Don't Try This, whatever it's called. But it's David Blaine.
Oh, the cool.
Magician, sorry.
The magician, yeah.
No. I'm a musician, okay? I don't been doing all that magic stuff. I think you got me confused with all those like magic tricks. I don't do that. I sing and I act, okay? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh my God. It was a TikTok. It was I don't know her name. I think she's supposed to be a comedian, maybe. Anyway, so the video podcast, she's like, so how long have you been a musician? She's like, I'm not a musician. She's like, I'm gonna do magic. She's like, no. She's like, I think you're confusing magician with musician. And she's like, man, she's like, I don't be thinking. She's like, I don't be thinking. Oh my God. I know I'm like messing it all up.
I feel like I maybe know what you're talking about, because now it sounds kind of slightly familiar.
And that was, and it was going back and forth. Like, some people were saying it was a skit.
Okay.
But other people were like, I don't know. Some people thought it was real. Some people thought it was real.
That's funny. Yeah, it sounds familiar, but I feel like I probably did see it. I just couldn't remember.
That's why I'm interviewing you today, so I can get to know you.
So I'm a musician.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What the fuck? That means make magic or something? What is musician?
I think you're confusing that.
Yeah, I'm not no musician. I make music. I make music. And that's not all I do. I make music. I act. I'm a TV star too, a young mom. Uh-huh.
Just really quick, I think you're confusing.
I'm not confusing nothing, because you don't know. You thought that all I was a magician or whatever the fuck you said.
See, that's what I think you think I said. No, I said musician, magician.
I don't think, baby. I don't think. What is that? That's ghetto. I don't think. I know.
So you
think.
I didn't say magician, Suki. I said musician. And I think you are a musician.
No, baby, I do music.
So you, just really quick, for the record, could you say you don't think you're a musician?
I'm not none of that.
But then after that, you just said I do music.
Yeah, I do music.
So in other words, you're a musician.
No, I'm not.
Yes, I do remember that now.
No, I don't know if it's true or not. Some people are saying like that was all like fake to like be funny, but some people believe that she's just really that out there. So I don't know.
I think it was fake just because the girl that does that podcast, her name is Bobby. A lot of her stuff is like sarcastic like that. And it seems like, and people like play on it when they're on her podcast. So I feel like even if it wasn't scripted, I feel like it was like not. Like, she wasn't actually saying that, but who knows? But I do remember saying that.
She's like, think? What is that? I don't think. That's ghetto.
I know. I know. So good.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't even know where I was going with that, but that's how far I got side-railed with that.
I like it. I think it's a good place to end, I think. We'll just leave it with Bobby and Suki.
Yeah, I can't even remember what the point was now of... See, talking about Seth Rogen, I got the contact and
yep. Just talking about him makes it happen.
I just lost it.
Oh, that's good.
Yep. All right, well on that note...
Jinx.
I'm going to go and get comfy and lay down for the night and maybe, just maybe, get to page 5.
We're rooting for you.
Thanks.
Stay creepy, guys.
All right. We got to go.
Bye.
Bye.